Okay. So, good morning, everybody. It is 10 a.m. on January 7th, 2020, and I'll call the meeting of Story County Board of Supervisors to order. And if you would like to, please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Everybody. First we have on the agenda is the adoption of today's agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I would so move approval as presented.
I'll second.
Olson?
Aye.
Seddon?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda approved. Next we have public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. And we have two people who would like to make comments on Resolution 20-53. The first one is Brenda Brink. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning.
My name is Brenda Brink from 29514 U.S. Highway 69 Huxley, and I'm here to speak about the proposed resolution, which is to urge the Iowa Utilities Board to not waive the right to a public hearing. This is actually not a right, but it's a rule from the Iowa Utilities Board regarding the doubling of oil through the Dakota Access Pipeline. And so I'm going to read some of what I had already submitted to them just to kind of set the stage. But I am a resident of Story County who lives approximately 2 miles from the Dakota Access Pipeline, and I object to the company's lawyers asserting that the folks who live in Iowa do not have a reason to object. The idea that doubling the amount of oil in this pipeline would not pose a risk, not be a substantially greater burden when spills occur, and that landowners don't care is not even common sense, especially since the pipeline was not sold with this amount of oil being transported. It is only reasonable and prudent that we do care. It is not just landowners who would be affected by a spill. It is local folks like me and also local and county first responders and other emergency personnel. And when it comes to oil and air, it doesn't stay in a pipeline and it doesn't stay in one spot. So as we look, the neighbors to the north of us were putting in more tiling this past fall after the crops were out. We have got so much tiling in Iowa. The oil will not stay there if it spills. And the idea that it's not going to spill is ludicrous. There have been so many spills of oil from pipelines, including this very pipeline. So when the oil spills, which it will, the pressure from doubling the oil will spread that even farther and spread the amount in catastrophic ways. And I don't think people realize that it's not just oil in there. There are proprietary substances that they put in the oil, like benzene, which is a proven carcinogen. So this is a big concern to me, and the public needs to have the ability to weigh in. They should not be the company's lawyers for the Dakota Access Pipeline want to waive the rule that says there should be a public hearing, and that is wrong. So I'm so glad that we've got this resolution, which is resolution number 20-53, request to set a hearing on the proposed operating capacity increase of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Kimberly Stevens.
Good morning. I'm Kimberly Stevens from 65207 Indian Creek Trail here in Nevada. I also want to put my support in for this resolution. I was not involved in the DATL fight years ago. I had young kids and other things going on. But it is of great concern that many of these pipelines that we were promised would never have oil spills pretty routinely. And I believe that the public should be allowed to weigh in on any increase in oil capacity. So I really thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who has a public comment on this or any other topic on the agenda today? Okay. Then I will close the public comment session and we'll go into agency reports. We have none. We also, the next item is consideration of minutes. We don't have any minutes to review today. Consideration of personnel actions, we have none. Consideration of claims.
Oh, don't we have personnel actions?
They're not on the agenda.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Never mind.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not on the agenda. Consideration of claims. I'd entertain a motion to approve claims as presented.
So moved. Second.
Okay. Edens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Claims are approved. Next is the consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull anything from the consent agenda?
No. I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
I second the motion.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Edens?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Consent agenda items are approved. So we will go on then. There are no public hearing items. We are at additional items. 11.1, now we are at resolution 20.53 to the request of the Iowa Utilities Board. As we have had some public comments about, are there any further discussion?
I think the only thing I'd like to say is that I have heard from folks throughout Story County that have contacted me who said they would like for us to approve the resolution because they would like to have a public hearing. Mm-hmm. They would like their voices to be heard. Some are very concerned, many I should say, not just some, are very concerned with the increasing of capacity and want to have some assurance in regards to potential impact that it may have, precautions, and just some of the reasoning. They're not so long the reasoning necessarily for increasing the capacity.
And I suspect all three of us have heard from people. So I also just want to emphasize that I don't think it's any big surprise that people know that I'm all for transparency and public input. And so with the doubling of the capacity here, I think there definitely needs to be public input, and I also don't agree with the attorney from the pipeline that they've got a free pass on this without any kind of public hearing. And so, yeah.
And I've heard from people as well, and I have been following the comments that have been submitted. Sierra Club has objected. The most recent one I saw of the group was the Office of Consumer Advocate, which is division of the U.S. Department of Justice, objected to the request as well. And
objected to DAPL's request to not
have it. Yes, thank you. And so that's why I submitted the resolution for today. So I am also very much for it. I think we have in Story County, we have the sole pumping station in the state, and if there's a double capacity, I think there's an increased concern about that pumping station we have down by Cambridge. So I believe that Story County residents and all Iowa residents need to be able to weigh in with our utility board. So I'd entertain a motion.
I move resolution 2053.
I second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
The resolution is approved. And thank you for the people who came to talk about this. Appreciate it. Okay. Next, we have resolution 20.50, C&S Cairns Residential Partial Subdivision. Marcus and Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
Good morning, Board. In front of you is the residential parcel subdivision for C&S Cairns. This property is located in the Indian Creek Township, Section 19, Township 82, Range 22. The current parcel number is 15-19-300-105. The district that this parcel currently falls underneath the A1 Agricultural District, the Collins Maxwell School District, Maxwell Fire, Story County Sheriff, Story County Ambulance, Indian Creek Watershed Consumers Energy and Indian Creek Drainage 66. So the location is where that yellow star is. It's about equidistant between Cambridge and Maxwell on 315. So to meet the requirements, the residential parcel subdivision must be completely within the A1 district. It is. Lots created are meet an exception to the 35-acre minimum in the A1 district, and the dwelling on the subject property was constructed in 1976. It is located approximately 4 feet south of 315th Street right-of-way and 545 feet east of 620th Avenue right-of-way. Here's the proposed subdivision. Lot 1, which is on the western side of the parcel, is proposed to be 2.61 net acres. It would be considered buildable for a dwelling. There is an existing driveway, however, on Lot 2, that there's an easement that they've granted for that, and we'll discuss how that would change further on in the future. Proposed Lot 2 is a 3.5 net acre lot with the existing single-family dwelling on it. Lot A, Outlot A, is 1.8 net acres and would not be considered buildable. So the land use for the property is agricultural conservation area by the Cornerstone Capstone Comprehensive Plan. The subject property currently has approximately 3 acres in row crop production. That's where Lot 1 is kind of identified as that portion there. So surrounding land use is completely surrounded by A1. No parcels that have dwellings on them are contiguous with this actual parcel. The remainder of the quarter-quarter separated from the subject property is in row crop production south of this. And there's 17 parcels within a quarter mile of the subject property. All those receive notification about this. So looking north from on 315th Street from the lot 1 and 2 on 315th, looking south towards the proposed lots with the existing dwelling, which would be lot 2. To the east there.
Marcus, can I ask you a question on that, just that picture? So if you went back, so is lot 2 where we're seeing the land right there, or is it on the other side of the house?
Lot 2 begins at the closest access to that house, and then lot 1 is closer to us in that picture.
So the picture here, is this lot 1?
Yes, okay, right there is lot 1, and then in the distance is lot 2.
Okay, thank you.
There's lot 2. Looking on to what would become lot 1 from 315th Street. And then this is from the lot 2, looking to the northwest. And then just on the eastern edge of lot 2, looking to the east. The applicable regulations for this, it does meet all of our regulations. There were, like I said, we had sent out notices on December 27th to everyone within that quarter mile. No one had any comments about it from the public. We did speak with the engineer. There are 3 existing accesses on this parcel right now, so there's discussion about either removing one or granting an access. With how it is currently set up, there's 3 accesses like that. The easement is on the northwest corner of lot 2. If and in the future at some point lot 1 wanted its own access, in order for that to happen, one of these existing accesses would have to be removed, and that would go through the engineer. And so environmental health had commented that proposed lot 2 contains two wells and has a septic permit. The laterals are within the boundaries. If lot one, were to be developed, well, septics are permitted through Environmental Health Department, and they have no concerns with the subdivision. So points to consider, all requirements for the residential subdivision applied in Section 87.07 of the Historic Hamlet Land Development Regulations are met. Court reporter was previously divided, contains the existing dwelling, 17 total parcels, within the quarter mile, three of which had single family. No one provided any comments back. And the proposed lot one will not add another access at this time, and we'll just have an easement if it were to be developed in the future. However, as of right now, it's not planned to be developed. There are the recommendations for the board with planning and development staff supporting option one, the approval of resolution 20-50. And the owners are here if there are any other questions.
Thank you for, like I said before, it was a very good report. Thank you.
Cool.
So,
any questions?
No, I don't at this particular time.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right? What you want to do and why you want to do it. I'd make a motion. I move that we approve Resolution 20-50, the Residential Partial Subdivision Plat, known as the C&S Carnes Subdivision, as put forth in the case B09-19.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, any further discussion?
Okay.
Not Olson?
Aye.
Hidden?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
20.50 is approved. Thanks for coming.
Yes. Thank you, board.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you farm it yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Enjoy your retirement.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have discussion and consideration of request for the Storey County Board of Supervisors' opinion about a proposal to change the name of Squaw Creek, one for the City of Ames, Storey County, and Franklin Township, Boone County, and Hamilton County. We have looked at this before. We've discussed it. We've gotten considerable input from residents, I think, of Storey County, also from tribal historic preservation officers that we reached out to. We have had lots of suggestions and both comments both for renaming the creek and for leaving the name of the creek the same. I don't know if I didn't tally necessarily, but I continually get more people saying, have you done that yet? So I know that people are interested in what's going on, so let's maybe want to have some discussion first before we entertain a motion.
Certainly. Yeah, I would concur. I've had more folks contact me that are for changing the name that I have that are against changing it. Certainly I've had a few on that, and actually had one person who came to visit with me personally about changing the name, and then after I explained a little bit of the history and the reasoning, they kind of walked out of my meeting saying, okay, well, if you want to change it, change it. So some of them just don't understand some of the history behind it and that it has been requested. This isn't the first time that it's been requested, but it's been sought out several times for change. Besides hearing from constituents and, as you said, from some tribal leadership, I also reached out to someone who has background with the Iowa tribe that are down in Oklahoma, who came back with just some other suggestions. I went forth with some of our last conversation, just some names that we had kind of thrown around initially. I wanted to make sure that there was not any negative connotations associated with it, that we would be using a correct pronunciation or spelling should we go that particular route. And so he did provide me some of that particular information. One thing I have found interesting is that I really had kind of thought through some of the tribal folks that I would get more definitive suggestions. You know, this would be a good recommendation. They certainly did not provide a recommendation. I think they were looking at us to be kind of the leaders on what we would like to be and just set out their opinions to ensure that we were being culturally sensitive.
Right. And I think to that point is that some of the names that did come to the forefront as synonyms for Indian female, Indian woman, are multi-syllables. Pronunciations are different than they look like they're spelled.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's of concern if we're going to do a name change in addition by the Bureau of Geological Names. I think that's the right one.
Board on Geographic Names.
Thank you. Okay, Board on Geographic Names. They would like it kept very short and simple, one word if possible. So I appreciated some of the people who are the native and tribal cultural people appreciating that, knowing that. Yes. I just would like to make a comment that in parts this has been sad for me because of the people who are against the name change. Some of the comments that came back, the swearing and the foul language aside that were put in emails, were also the fact that it turns out we don't know much about this word and what we, especially I think of this area as pretty much a Northern European background with our heritage, is that we've not understood how a word that was never a word in the Indian language to begin with. It was an attempt, they believe, by the early, early settlers in the East to pronounce, to find an abbreviated form of a word, and how that has then been twisted and taken on very negative sexual gender connotation. And so it has been with some bittersweetness that as we've gone through this process. But I'm glad that we've persevered, and I do have a couple of the names that I think kind of rise to the surface in my preference, but given that we don't have a standard recommendation from any of the tribal cultural people that we contacted.
Yeah, and I would also just like to add, I read through, you know, several years of minutes from the U.S. Geological of Names, and there are, I think, Squaw Creek is in almost every state, from what I could find. Certainly, you know, wasn't tallying up, you know, every single one, but certainly came up. It was being changed everywhere.
Yeah.
So to me, that is something very telling, that folks aren't just saying, okay, we're just going to leave it. They are changing it in other states as well.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for doing all of that. I did a quick Wikipedia search and I found the same thing, but I think you got into that a lot more to see if that, what was the trend, what were other jurisdictions doing. And I think that is important for us to think about. What I got in terms of feedback was the person who had made the recommendation had suggested Story Creek. I had almost nobody who thought Story Creek was a good idea. First, we've already honored Joseph Story by naming Story County, we have Story City. And the second thing is the creek doesn't just go through Story County. You know, it's actually in four counties. So I think other folks wouldn't appreciate us maybe doing that. In general, people said it would be good to think of something that honored Native Americans, possibly a tribe that had lived here. And I agree with what Supervisor Olson said. We need to think about a name that's going to be easy to pronounce, that if we can find a name that honors Native Americans at the same time isn't something that most of the people who live here now go, what is that, and requires, you know, huge pronunciation lessons or something. I think probably we need to stick with something simple. And the two things that I had heard were the Iowaway, I-O-W-A-Y, because that was the first tribe that was here past prehistoric peoples, evidently. And then Sauk, S-A-U-K. And Sauk is pretty close to Sac, and we have a Sac County, we have a Sac City. My personal preference, I think, is probably Iowaway, because I think it's something that people have heard before, and people identify that the Iowaway tribe was here. But I don't know that we have to come up with one thing. We might be able to come up with a couple recommendations, but I did not hear anybody really thinking that Story Creek, or many people thinking Story Creek was a good name, given the history of, you know, the name that we have now. So
I settled down to three. Iowaway, Nequa, which is a variation. It means our mother, so it would keep in the connotation, but in the more positive way of honoring Native American women, and then Sauk. And Sauk because of the ease, the familiarity with pronunciation. So those were the three I came up with.
And I came up with three as well. Actually, I kind of came up with four. I really initially really liked the word Hinage, but I also recognize that the multi-syllable one and just the spelling would probably be potentially difficult for people to state that. And certainly, if you're going to recognize or honor and be more politically correct or tribal sensitive, you're insensitive if you're mispronouncing the name all the time. So that one, unfortunately, kind of dropped from my list. So I, too, had Iowaway. I had Sauk. And then I also had the Iowaway word for woman or my mother, which was Hina.
How's it spelled?
H-I-N-A.
Ah, okay.
So I guess there's two questions. One is, our recommendation form says we have these following options: approving the proposed name, rejecting the proposed name, taking action as specified below, and rendering a decision without our recommendation. So taking action as specified below, we could say whatever we wanted. It could be change the name. Here are some options. Change the name. Here's our one recommendation, or the anything else.
And I will add to what you said earlier in the name of Story Creek not being one that folks put as a top priority. Mm-hmm. I did hear back from Hamilton County. At least I reached out to Boone County and Hamilton County just to get their feedback. Hamilton County, they did not at all like Story mm-hmm. Creek. They did feel like, okay, you're just recognizing something that's for Story County and the creek does not.
Most of the creeks actually in Hamilton.
It's actually correct. So I do know that they are seriously looking at changing the name as well. I think they're waiting since we kind of started the motion to see what we put forth. And that's, I think, is kind of what I've heard from Boone County. And I think actually the city of Ames is mm-hmm. doing the same thing.
They have, the city, my understanding is they have said they approve of changing the name, but they haven't come up with a specific recommendation yet.
I did, at the District 1 Supervisors meeting, one of the Hamilton County Supervisors who had weighed in previously with an email about townships came to me and he said, look, we're willing to work with you guys and you take the lead. And he just flat out said that. So that's nice of them. Appreciate that. So I think we probably do need to nail it down to one or two. Of four now we've discussed, because Hina I like too, but so the decision a little bit for me about looking at the names is right now we definitely want to remove a derogatory name for females, okay, Native American females. So then do we feel that we need to go to keep it with a kind of a feminine context about me going with Hina or Nequa, okay, or to
if we just go ahead and honor the Native American tribes who are affiliated with our area instead. And I decided, for me personally, that it was more important maybe just to honor overall, you know, and get rid of the female connotation, especially since it was so negative, and even according to a local historian, the reason that name was picked was derogatory even. So I'd be back to probably Iowa or Sauk.
Yeah, and I would concur on that. When I reached out to Mr. Goodtracks, it was from our previous conversation, and most of the names we generated were or initially were kind of connected for the female name for a creek, and some of the names that we had come up with. So that's where I just sought out to make sure that if we wanted to go that route, we were spelling correctly, we were stating it correctly, and there wasn't anything negative associated with that, because I'm not a Native American historian, and that's why we reach out to folks and get their input. So I would be fine with either Iowa or Sauk.
Do you think she would propose one or she would propose both?
The benefit, I think, of proposing both is to get cooperative buy-in from the other large entities we've just discussed, Hamilton County, giving them, you know, an opportunity to weigh in, Boone County for a little bit, and for Ames. And so there may be something we haven't thought of, or someone coming forward that would argue to one of these other jurisdictional bodies, if I guess we don't have jurisdiction, but geographic governments, that would stand out for them, and they'd go with one name, and we'd be fine with either one. That's my reasoning within two.
So what I'm kind of hearing is that you're proposing maybe a motion to recommend to change the name of Squaw Creek, however, to reject the proposed name and to consider either Iowa or Sauk.
Correct.
Yeah, and I would be fine with that. My kind of devil's advocate question is does that slow the process or potentially stop the process if we don't provide one recommendation? And that I don't know, because you could have it either way. You could provide one and other folks may want something else, and it may slow that process as well. So
I thought of exactly the same one, and I came back on the side, obviously, of getting their more involvement in it.
Sure.
But you're right. If we settle on one, or maybe instead word the motion that we've settled on, we prefer, but also this one has great merit, just how we could word this, then that does send them
right.
more direction if they'd like to follow our lead.
Yeah, and the fact that they haven't, they're kind of waiting for us.
Yeah.
And so I would concur that we can give them a little bit more buy-in to it, or more, I guess buy-in's not the thing. A lot of them have already bought in that they want to make the change. They just want more say in the process. And since they're not sitting at the table here, they have to do it in their own jurisdictions. Give them a point of conversation.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Are you saying we have a preference? Do we have a preference among those two, or between those two names?
I kept on saying the two out loud, all right, and thinking about this. And I found that Sauk came off of my tongue more easily, related to the conversion to some squaw. However, I think Iowa, which is also pretty easy, and sometimes we kind of use that when we're joking around, right, for Iowa, right? But Iowa, that's historically more accurate. They were the first Native American tribe clearly identified with the area. So I would go with Iowa as my preference.
Yeah, I think that would be my number one, would be Iowa as well. I recognize that the state of Iowa is recognized for the Iowa tribe, but it doesn't give their exact tribal name.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit of a difference there.
So does somebody want to make a motion?
I move that we select the action as specified below, that we recommend that the name Story be rejected, but the name IOA be the preferred consideration for us, with SOC as an alternative.
So could I ask for a clarification that we are for renaming the creek?
Oh, yes, sorry, okay, yes. So my motion would be our take action as specified below is that we support renaming the creek, but reject the name Story and instead prefer the name Iowa, with a second preference being SOC.
And I will second that motion.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Not, do you have the motion, Shelley? Dennis knows. There's no further discussion. Olson?
Aye.
Eddie?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. We have made our recommendation, then.
And I appreciate both of yours also research on this particular issue.
I think we all did.
It's been a collective.
You two did all the heavy carrying, so thank you on that.
Well, we did. We collectively did a lot. I also was really appreciative of the tribal historic preservation officers, because we did reach out to about 60 emails that state the archaeologist office gave us, and a lot of people responded, the THPOs, and we're very glad to hear that we were looking at changing it, and basically they had some ideas or options, but they just said, please honor Native Americans, and I think we did a good job of going through that and figuring out the best way, you know, to do that in our minds.
And that was the feedback from residents we heard from, too, is find some way to honor Native Americans.
Good. Thank you, everybody. Now we will go on then to discussion and consideration of county attorney appointment process and timeline. Alyssa, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so what you saw on the agenda, there were three different documents attached. Those I used, you know, with the different dates, and then took the process that was put in place 3.5 years ago, updated some of that information, and used some other input. So I think it makes sense to start with the timeline and get that discussed and maybe set before we move on to the requirements that you want applicants, what their submittal requirements. So. The timeline that you saw attached to the agenda, it does take into consideration the resignation of our county attorney effective at noon on February 7th. That was information we did not have at last week's meeting. So I did develop a timeline so that you could have the possibility of appointing a county attorney immediately following that resignation. So looking at this, you would take applications for just over 2 weeks, just shy of 2.5 weeks. You could review the applicant, name any finalists if you want to name finalists or if you want to invite everyone for a presentation. It has a date in there to comply with the publishing of the notice of your intent to fill that vacancy. And then also presentations prior to the afternoon of February 7th, where you could appoint a new county attorney. Okay. It's a fairly quick turnaround, but I think it's I think it gives you plenty of time to consider all the applicants.
And then to go back to Auditor Lucy Martin's presentation from last week also, then once the notice is published, is that when the 14 days begins if citizens want to try and raise a petition?
My understanding is the day of the appointment.
It's whatever's later.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever's
so
later.
The 7th. They have 14 days from February 7th.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you to County Attorney Reynolds for giving us the clarification about when the resignation would be effective. That helped answer our questions. It looks fine to me.
Yeah, the timeline looks fine to me as well. My one question would be the special meeting for presentations, would that potentially be an evening?
Or afternoon. I wasn't sure what the board, I wouldn't recommend having it with you. It's on a Tuesday.
Right, with our board meeting. No,
our board meeting, but I didn't know if you wanted to start the presentations in the afternoon or if you wanted to go evening.
I'd like the public there. That then gives the public an opportunity to either watch, and I would hope, I'm looking back at Sandra King in the back here, but hope maybe we could get those videotapes recorded so that it could go online maybe on Wednesday morning. The point being giving members of the public an opportunity to at least contact us if they heard something in a presentation that attracted them or made them, so that they get an opportunity at least to weigh in with us before we go ahead and actually make the appointment on the 7th.
Not all members of the public work first shift.
And I understand that. I do. Right. So your point is if we're recording it, then it doesn't matter.
I don't think it does.
Okay.
If it's there and available, then it's available to anybody regardless of what hours they work or have available.
Yeah, I'm fine with the timeline. I just didn't know if you needed to make that determination at this particular time as to when you want to do those final presentations or...
I would, so we can get the information out there for those that
sure.
apply. I think giving them as much notice as possible.
Sure.
I mean, depending on when you have it, they may need to rearrange work schedules or...
That's right. I'm thinking there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with the evening. I just didn't see it clarified here. I knew that would be part of our discussion, so...
Historically, we've not had as great of attendance at day meetings unless we've had a particularly contentious issue. I'm just trying to think also when we get the most people physically here.
I have no problem with an evening meeting.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make the point that doesn't make it available to everybody.
It's a great point.
So I don't make a motion. Do you want a motion then to approve the timeline? As presented, with the addition that the special meeting on the 4th would be an evening meeting. I don't know, do we usually do like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock?
Six.
I think 6 o'clock.
6 p.m.? That's 6 p.m.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion on the timeline? Edmonds?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay, that's approved. Then what else would you like us to look at?
Sure. The next thing I think would be what do you want submitted with an application? We have our general application that has the agency-wide questions as we ask. It's got the veterans preference questions that was used last time. And then there were some additional pieces that are on this. You can look at them. We can discuss all of them. We can go down. So we've got the online on there is a cover letter resume. That's pretty standard with any application. References or letters of recommendation. The last time they did references, that would require the three of you to call those references if you prefer to have letter of recommendation submitted with the application. I have seen that done. I would just recommend that we specify the number so you don't get 20 or 30 with each applicant.
As long as the references, the applicants tell the references in advance that they may be getting 3 phone calls, okay, I would be good with calling the references because you never know what particular thing may be said that would lead to follow-up questions to that reference. And I am assuming that we can ask each reference different follow-up questions, correct?
You can ask clarifying questions.
Clarifying questions, okay.
It all depends what you're wanting to ask. What type of references? Are they personal? Are they professional? How many?
Mm-hmm.
I like to specify things as much as possible.
Okay.
To make sure you get what you need. You don't want all personal references. I would recommend having more professional.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that could actually account to their qualifications for this.
So you have no problem with asking different questions?
On references. I mean, typically we ask the same questions on our references and follow up if we need clarification on them.
Mm-hmm. But legally, we can't.
I would have a reference sheet with your questions and then just go through with each reference that you're asking and document that. If you've got a follow-up based on their response, that's fine.
And we would have, I mean, if we made a recommendation by February 7th, I'm just trying to look at the timeline.
There isn't going to be a lot of time to call references
about
this
week.
Timeline.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I put the letter recommendation option
right
in.
Yeah, that would be my only question, is you've got a week to reach all the references, depending on how many.
And you might not be able to reach them. I mean, we have difficulty reaching references.
Yeah, right.
They could be gone or, you know, not able to respond. So it's completely up to how the board wants to handle it.
Right. That would just be my one concern. Do you have a week's time frame and they're going to get three phone calls from
With the last appointment, I believe they got letter of recommendations versus references. Lucy, is that how you handled the the most recent one?
We asked for written letters of recommendation specified a number, but that was, you know, we also didn't have our regular meeting, and we didn't, HR doesn't work directly for our office, so you have some, I think, more tools in your toolbox than our vacancy committee did. So, it's really whatever process is comfortable for the three of you to choose.
The other option we could do, so not having three separate people calling, would be to submit any questions we had to HR, and they could do the reference checks and document them and get that back to us.
I'm uncomfortable with that. We're not hiring. We're appointing an elected official, who we assume will become elected official. And so I think we need to keep that with us. I'm fine if each one provided three references and I'm not able to interview all three of them, okay, in that week's period of time. And that could be possible given the fact also we're probably going to get references from judges. You know, that would seem to be, if I was applying for a county attorney's position, at least one of my references would be a judge. I've appeared before, and they're in court a lot or whatever. So I feel my obligation as a supervisor is to try and reach out to those references and get information. But if I don't make all three, when we start to have our discussion, possibly you were able to get in touch with one, because our schedules are also varied also. So
I guess my question then would be, if we said three references, but what if we weren't for someone able to reach any of their references due to schedule, but others we were able to get all three, you wouldn't have a full kind of packet of information in regards to them versus having someone to write some letter recommendation.
Right.
I do think it's good to have that personal conversation. I don't discount that at all. That would be my only concern. Or do we say two references and one letter of recommendation?
Wow.
So we have, have something from everybody, something written from at least everybody.
So question 18 says, name at least three judges capable of discussing qualifications and effectiveness of you as an attorney. And then the application itself asks for three references in general.
We specify in the posting how many you want, because you can put as many in there as you want. The application template does not let me say three, five. So we put it in the posting.
Okay.
And that would be, I mean, that's one thing. Are they looking at the posting, at the what they need to submit with it? Do they list three? Well, that was in there. It's completely, either way. We've done it both. I think you get about as much information from a letter of recommendation. When we call on references, a lot of places won't give much information other than hire dates anymore.
So, I'm wondering if there's any way that we can do something of deciding what references to check on various applicants and then somehow coordinating it among the three of us so we're not all calling the same people. I'm trying to think how that might work. I'm not sure it's a good idea or not, but it seems better to me than three calls to some very busy and probably not very available core personnel.
Mm-hmm. And as I'm thinking through that process, because I also like what Lisa said about maybe we ask for, you know, one written or two written and one to call. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So back to now thinking about Linda here, how do we do that process? We have to have the discussion in open session. So we may not be getting into specifics then. If we all said, I'm taking these two references, you're taking that reference because that person, another person already listed that. I mean, assuming we've got, say, three applicants or four.
Well, my question is, what are you going to ask in a reference? I mean, typically it states quality of work. It's pretty standard.
I think that
questions.
What
I mean, are you going to develop questions based on each applicant or are we going to...
Once again, we're not hiring somebody. We are looking to appoint, and then this person's going to most likely run for office, maybe not, you know.
Sure.
But so the kind of questions I want to talk to a reference about are, all right, when, let's say it is a judge, because we listed judges here, all right, and when this person comes into your courtroom and does oral arguments, does the person appear to be able to think on his or her feet? Related to what's coming back from you, your questions. Are those questions thought out? Does this person seem to come in well prepared? I'm very interested myself in wanting to get a feel whether this person, in laying out legal arguments, references both the points that support his or her position and do not support his or her position. I think in my experience, yes, I'm very interested because this person's going to be advising us. And so I have a definite preference about what kind of advice I want to see coming forward in the future as long as I'm on this board. And I know that attorneys have different schools of thought about what are they obligated to tell their clients. All right, or what should do they feel they should tell their clients? Should they also tell their clients about the Iowa Supreme Court ruling that doesn't support their position? So that's what I'm interested in. And that's why I want to make it very clear that this is, in fact, you know, I mean, by hiring, we're not hiring, we're appointing.
But you still have the liability. So if something happens, they could still file. It's still an appointment process. It's no different than hiring anybody.
It's not an election, it's an executive.
So I would still have, you know, I wouldn't ask each a lot of different questions for even the reference. I mean, you could still get a claim. I'm not saying you're going to. I'm just saying as evenly, you know, process that you can have for all applicants. Now, your questions, I would ask that for all of them, Laura.
Right.
My question was, are you going to look at the application and develop certain questions based on that applicant? I would not necessarily do that.
Okay.
I would have questions, reference questions that you're going to ask on each individual you're interviewing.
So those questions that you've already got in mind, I've probably got in mind, we could submit those to you and you could put them on a form.
And then you could ask, everybody could ask them all. I mean,
that
I would recommend having it be pretty consistent. If you want follow-up questions or need clarifications on a response you get from a reference, I think what you're asking, Laura, is you have the, you know, it is an appointment, you did it. There is a question on here asking them for judges.
Mm-hmm.
So you can ask the three judges. Three judges discuss their qualifications. So you can do that outside of the reference check. That's a different question.
Okay.
I don't know whether they'll put judges as a reference or if it will be other
peers,
attorneys or supervisors they've had. I don't know who they would utilize. So.
Okay. Right.
But I would, if you're really curious on the judge and how they perform in court, I would use that supplemental question, you know, list three judges and go contact them.
Okay.
And kind of figure it out from there. So, but yeah, our reference process is we ask if we have two people we're doing reference checks on, typically it's just one. We would ask the same questions.
I don't know why we would ask different questions.
No, because you're going to want to gain the same, you know, work quality.
Yeah.
You know, right.
If you ask a totally different question,
you're going
to
get
one after the other. You're not comparing apples to apples, no. So to speak. You're almost picking the information you want to use for an applicant. That is the argument I would make. I think we should have a list of reference check.
Okay.
Reference check questions. And submit them to you, and you compile them.
Just compile them all and have one.
And I assume you're not going to want to have like 22 questions.
No. We usually have four or five questions, and we do it both ways. We send it by email sometimes because that individual is more. I mean, some won't respond by phone. We can't get a hold of them, so we always try by phone. And then if we can't, we do send them the form to fill out. We're seeing a lot more of that more recently.
If we were each to submit two or three questions, I would imagine that some of them would be similar enough to be combined and you could come up with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why don't we try to do that?
All right.
Okay. When would you like to have questions?
Oh.
Not this afternoon.
No. by the beginning of next week,
we'll
if that'd be
that
possible.
Staff, right?
I mean, if I give you a week, is that enough?
I think a week.
By the beginning of next week.
Next week.
Beginning of next week.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing that has to go back through a board meeting, but I'll just compile that way. We have time prior to the 28th.
Okay.
Can we do that?
That's fine.
So I just want to make sure that we're clear. We're going to just go with references and not letters of recommendation. And I like your idea of one written letter of recommendation and then the two calls,
two references. Okay. Professional references? Or does it matter? Just two references?
Professional, not judge, maybe? And leave the judges for us to do our
own. Well, a judge could be considered professional.
Yeah.
The judges are already on here.
Right. Yeah.
They might use them as a reference.
That's why I'm saying.
Right. We wouldn't disqualify anybody if they listed one of the judges as their reference.
Right.
I would.
Okay. All right. So.
Okay. So just two professional and then one letter of recommendation.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. I don't know. So everyone okay with that?
Yeah. I like it.
Okay.
It's a good middle ground.
Okay. Anything else about the submittal requirements or the questions or the process? I think you're wanting us to approve the submittal requirements.
Those requirements.
And also the screening matrix?
Yeah. Or even you have to have a discussion of it to see if you even want to use it. So there is a legal writing sample. Did you want to keep that on there? They did submit it last time.
Yeah.
There was also a copy of a judge's decision for a case. This is new this time. I did get a request to put this on there.
I asked for this. I want to know. We just know that the odds are that at some point we're going to not prevail in a legal case. I worked for a couple of attorneys a long time ago they told me that, remember, on every case that goes to court, there's a prevailing attorney and one who didn't win, and sometimes you can't bet in advance which one it would be. So I want to know instead more the process a little bit about what road they went down that, you know, didn't prevail. Because it's just a fact of life.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
I'm fine with the submittal requirements. I know you also provided with the submittal requirements for some supplemental questions as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know I provided you some suggested ones.
All three supervisors did individually, and I've incorporated everything.
Yeah. So, great. Thank you.
So it's fairly, I mean, there's a lot of questions. It's going to take a little bit of time for them to put everything together. The process, too, we do run a background check before the appointment on the finalist. That's why we do have the background release form. It is an appointment, not an election. So we do, at least in the past, the board has wanted to run that background check. That would be up to the current board.
I think that's appropriate. I remember going back to appointment process, if you will, prior headed into the 2016 2018 election after Paul Troop died. And one of the questions I think both you and I, when it were asked, I wasn't in your presentation, you weren't in mine, but the three that asked at that time, we were asked, is there anything in your background that would cause concern or embarrass the county? I mean, that was, you know. And so I don't know that they ran a background check. Instead, they relied upon each of us who were applying for the appointment to go ahead and answer that.
They did a post-appointment background check for that one.
Now, a very subjective question myself.
Yeah.
People are gonna
I'd rather run a bat and see if they've got a criminal. Now, they're probably not going to have a law license. I mean, you're appointing an attorney.
I agree.
Right. Yeah, prove it. There wouldn't be anything. But we did, when they appointed Jessica back in 2016, we did run a background check.
Okay.
So,
and she already worked for the county. And
she did.
Right.
So...
I have a question back to the submittal requirements. You mentioned about the CV that we need to list that separately.
We just put it in the posting, and then they have to attach it.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I was going to say, yeah, well, we definitely want to see.
The posting has the requirements, what needs to be submitted with the application. There are certain things that we can require when they do it online. They cannot submit this application without attaching something to the cover letter piece. Now, whether they attach a cover letter or not, I mean,
right?
Okay, but they have to. There are requirements that we can set up to make sure you get the documents you want to receive.
Because we do say resume, but since the CV is considered separate, I just wanted to
cover letter resume. Yeah, yeah, they're both on here.
Thank you. Yep.
Okay.
Do you need a motion or just the sense of the board on these? Do you want a motion to approve them?
No, we'll just approve it.
Okay. I move that we approve the submittal requirements and the supplemental questions as presented and attached to our agenda yesterday, as of yesterday morning at
with the clarification on references.
And with a clarification on the references.
Do you want to add the matrix into that also?
No, I'd like to discuss that separately.
Okay. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Ed?
Aye.
Merkin, aye.
Okay. Okay, and the last item, it was used back in 2016, was a applicant screening matrix. It's completely up to the board whether you want a tool to kind of go through and compare applicants, if you want to score them, if you just want something to kind of keep track of their qualifications to keep everything separate, that's completely up to the board. You don't have to have anything that says they get points, and the individual with the most points is going to be appointed. That really has to be your personal decision of who you want, and there might be other factors other than what's on this matrix that you'll want to take into consideration. So I did update a little bit of what was used, but it is completely however the board wants to screen the applicants. I mean, sometimes it's easier with a tool if you've got lots of applicants, kind of sorts things out. I have no indication of how many you'll have apply for this appointment.
I sat in the audience for that appointment at the end of 2016, having not taken the oath yet. And one of the things that I felt on this matrix is that the matrix is pretty easy to gear it to one particular applicant, and that I'm not quite sure how it was developed, created, you know, I mean, and where these various points and how many number of years seem to be sufficient one way or the other. So that was my impression sitting out in the audience, that it was tailored toward one particular applicant. And so I would hesitate to officially use any application screening matrix, because it might give members of the public or applicants the impression that we're going to stick to it. This is going to be a primary determining factor. And for me, the primary determining factors are going to be the answers to those questions in the presentations. I would hope that our constituents would trust us, that we would not be appointing someone who is brand new with no experience in a couple of these areas. But I don't put the same weight on, especially like in the mental health substance abuse commitment hearings or the China hearings.
I'm much more interested in having experience representing a government entity. I'm much more interested in the experience with having criminal law litigation. Those are the things that this office does, where the county attorney comes forward. We rely upon the county attorney. The public relies upon the county attorney for those, and the government relies upon it. And we do have a large staff in the county attorney's office, and there are several attorneys who have a decade experience in these others. Now, maybe they'll be applying also, but I just really am reluctant to officially use the screening matrix. I certainly would keep track, but so that's my opinion.
I have somewhat of a different opinion, because even though there's a couple things that you might see or the public might see that the county attorney's office does, all of these things are done by somebody in the county attorney's office. Mm-hmm. And even if you have somebody on staff who's got X number of years, quite a few years in one of these, they can retire. You can end up with a brand new person, a brand new attorney in the position. So I don't know that you're going to have a final applicant or a decision that, you know, somebody's going to have all of this, but as much as of the experience as you can get, I think the better. I will agree this is not set up to say whoever gets the highest score wins, but what I think it does is it helps focus our attention on these aspects that we might otherwise not see, because they're not what you see in the paper every day, or they're not what we see as supervisors, which is the civil. So I'm for using it, with the clear understanding that it is not the highest score wins, but that it focuses our attention on whether or not people have experience and how much.
So I would just like to say, I like to use a matrix when I've interviewed people, but I do it more as not necessarily, I mean, I've done various ways. Some of it I've used it for scoring points, and some I've just used it as just to keep track of more of a checklist. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yep, they do have experience in mental health or China or criminal, mm-hmm. or whatever. I'm not as concerned about, you know, do they get 2 points or 5 points, mm-hmm. or how many years they've done it. It's just, okay, I'm just going to check it off. Because otherwise you're looking through their resume, instead, you know, to find out where did they put that. So for me, that's just my only ways. I like to use it as just, it's kind of that checklist. It's just an easier thing for me to just follow along, and that way I can have the candidate's name and just go, yep, 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 they've got 9 out of 10. It's not something, again, that I would use as a determining factor, because I think this is different, because it is appointing for a public official position. But that's just kind of my...
What if you took the scoring off?
Yeah. I can do that, and actually I can just email all three of you the Excel spreadsheet, and you can adapt it to your needs on how you want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to have the same, because you may, Loris may value civil experience more than, you know, the experience they have with mental health and substance abuse. I mean, that's each individual supervisor's choice, but I can sure just send you the template, and you can, or I can take the scoring off, and then you could just document in each of them, this individual has 23 years of criminal law litigation, this one has 10, just to kind of track. I mean, you're going to want to track it somehow, and the tool will give you, I mean, at least, so you're comparing apples to apples on each applicant.
And taking the scoring off, and the checklist would work for us, and if you were willing to do it,
sure.
And then if we...
I'll just send it, you guys can keep your own.
I think it's really important, because otherwise what you can do is sometimes you can get swayed by a personal presentation, and somebody's a very good speaker, and you forget that, oh, but they don't have this or that. Right. So I think you're really wanting something to keep you focused on what we need.
Yes, you balance it out. I like that. I like that,
because I was going to use it for notes.
No, right, absolutely. But yeah, and understanding for this appointment, they really need to be a registered Story County and have a law license. Those are the two. I mean, those are the two very they have to have. Everything else is based on what you three want the county attorney.
Yeah. See, and
qualifications.
And I was just going to say the other thing I use kind of that or two is, did they submit all the requirement documents? I mean, that's what I just kind of look at. Oh, yep, they.
they did, you know, submit two references and one letter of recommendation. You know, they didn't overlook some, you know.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Their attention to detail.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda, for that compromise, suggestion, whatever.
I think it works for us. So, I would entertain a motion to approve the applicant screening matrix with scoring deleted.
I make that motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. Anything else, Alyssa, that we should be thinking about?
No, the posting will go live tomorrow. We'll get that, or I'll get that done and taken care of this afternoon. We will put it on the website. I'll get it out to County Attorneys Association. I know it can be posted out there.
Thank you
and we'll
very
put it
much.
On our website.
Okay, thank so you very much for your good, fast work on this, and particularly for getting the timeline to the point where we don't have to, or we may not have to consider making an acting appointment or an interim appointment, because I think that was going to be awkward if we weren't able to get somebody, you know, approved. I mean, if we need to do that, we can, but this makes it possible for us to appoint somebody right immediately after County Attorney Reynolds.
Yep.
Resignation's effective.
Yes.
And I think that's important for the county.
Okay.
So thanks very much, everybody. Good discussion. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought you did.
Yeah.
We'll do it again, Olson.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
We did.
She's the one that keeps track.
Better twice than not at all. Okay. Okay, moving on. Department reports. Jerry Moore, Planning and Development.
Hi. Good morning again.
Good morning again.
I can see it.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, this is the fourth quarter report from our Planning and Development Department. It's hard to believe that 2019 has come and gone. First thing that we usually show you is the zoning permits, and what you see is the totals for the fourth quarter for the last 5 years, and you see that we're down 6 permits total from 2018. We're down 4 from 2017. A high point, though, to point out is that we actually had more single-family dwelling permits for the last 4 years. Two of those are mobile homes in an A1 district. You're able to site a mobile home for care of a family member when there's an existing dwelling on the property, so we had two of those. And then if you look at the total, we had 35 dwelling, single-family dwelling permits, and a total of 132 for 2019, compared to 53 single-family dwelling permits with a total of 153. Valuation is up. We had a couple of houses. I think one of the single-family dwelling permits that we had this last quarter was over $600,000 in value. Do you think that contributed to the increase from the previous fourth quarter from 2018? Next thing is the distribution map. The yellow dots represent single-family dwellings, and we see a number of those on the north side, the south side of Ames, but they're also distributed east of Huxley, around the Cambridge area, as well as Colo. The lighter yellow represents single-family additions, and we see a few of those between Ames and Huxley and Cambridge. And then the blue represents accessory structures. We see a few of those east of Nevada, west of Colo. Typically what we see is a lot of growth in the west quarter or the west one-third, but we do have a distribution throughout the central part of the county, which is also encouraging. Development cases, we were down. I think we indicated at the joint meeting that we had the Planning and Zoning Commission that our numbers were down, but we also received some applications late in November and December. So total for that quarter, we had five. Two of those were conditional use permits, two were subdivisions, and one was a variance request, which is down from the 13 that we had the fourth quarter of 2018. But again, I'll just jump to like current cases, which is the fourth item down. I'll touch on what we've had before, but we've got a conditional use permit that we're reviewing for Story County Animal Control. They're proposing a building for keeping of livestock temporarily that they pick up to be located in the southwest portion of the property. That's going to be before the Planning and Zoning Commission and on to the Board of Adjustment on the 15th. The Ballard Golf and Country Club, came about, they requested to build an accessory structure for storing equipment, and through our review, we learned that the status of the country club is considered a non-conforming use. It started in 1974 as a permitted use in an A1 district, and so we have a permit for the clubhouse, for the golf course, for the dam that was constructed, but then in the late 70s, there was a change that was made, making it a conditional use permit item for golf courses. So we're taking them through a process, which is the conditional use permit process for this building that they're requesting. There's a few buildings that were constructed during that time period, from then and now, that there's no record of any permits, so we're also addressing that. And a couple of the buildings that they constructed, they're going to be required to apply for variance. It would have met the setback requirements had they applied for a zoning permit at the time they constructed it. But currently, it would not meet our setback requirements. So
you can't apply under a previous ordinance.
Pardon me?
You can't apply under a previous ordinance.
You cannot do that. No. But it's amazing how often we go back to review it. To get to get that understanding of it, but you always are required to follow the current standards when you receive a permit, and so that's going to be a conditional use permit, and then ultimately variance request for two existing buildings. Martin Marietta is requesting a conditional use permit modification. They're proposing to do some drilling on the north side of their site. They're trying to do some, I guess, what I call backfilling of materials, like small material that they can't sell in the market. And so with their equipment, they can no longer add to these piles that they're working on, so they're requesting to do drilling. And then they also have a trailer that they pull behind a truck that they use for first responding in the event of a disaster, or if there's issues on this mine or other mines in this area. And this is an off-site facility. And so that's a part of this CUP request that we're reviewing. It was before the Planning and Zoning Commission last month, and it got deferred. So it will be addressed in February. Grady is a minor subdivision. It's a request to divide an existing platted lot, a 16-acre lot, into two parcels. That one was also before the Planning and Zoning Commission and got deferred. And St. Peter and Paul Church is a conditional use permit request. They're up by Story City. They're requesting to add on to their parking area.
It's not the St. Peter's and Paul's that had the...
On
2 years ago.
500th Avenue, like
it is remodeled. Yeah, we approved that 2 years ago.
Yeah, they're adding to their parking lot.
They are. Okay.
So that's a conditional use permit request. I just noted that I participated with other staff and other outside individuals on the housing assessment consultant committee, which was interesting, rewarding process, and I think the committee made a recommendation on three strong candidates that had, I think, really good experience with the information that we're requesting in that RFP, and they had strong employees. with experience. And I've mentioned the appeals process, that we had over 109 appeals on the 2020 census. We're proud that we received support on all 109 of those. And then we just noted that we had 6 property research requests and 6 conceptual review meetings for future development. Complaints, these are probably the most active that we have. When we first started, there was a lot of debris and recycling materials. Mr. Ingram's property, we just visited there Monday of this week, and he has just about completed the removal of the items. When we showed up on Monday, there was a couple of trailers that he was getting ready to take to a facility in Marshalltown, but he's not completed yet. So we're continuing to work with him, and our position typically tends to be we continue to work with property owners, applicants who show progress through this review process. Mr. Haug has a property east of the city of Kelly, and he continues to clean up and provides us with receipts from like Bell Salvage and different places that he's taking his recycling material. Most of it is metal material. And then court cases, Crestview Mobile Home Park, right before that hearing, I think Marcus and I did a review, and there was additional cleanup that had taken place. The only items that were left were the stacks of the blocks that they had used to set the mobile homes. All the vehicles, the semis, the trailers were gone. A lot of the piles were gone. The only debris pile that existed is located where Mr. Reamer calls his shop area, the northeast side of that site. And so there was an agreement reached that he clean up everything by the middle of May. So we have this on our calendar to clean that up. I did forward the board the position on that item. Mr. Wiggers converted a single-family dwelling. He lives east of Kelly into 2 additional units. There was an agreement reached on that one. Part of his situation is he's meeting our definition, the county's definition of family, which includes people by marriage, by blood, plus 2 individuals who are not connected that way can be a part of the family. And so there was an agreement reached that he removed the appliances and the 2 additional units. He had converted a garage into living quarters and the basement into living quarters. But this is something that we mentioned at the joint meeting, that we're getting, there's interest from homeowners, from landowners, wanting the county, our staff, to explore, you know, what other jurisdictions are doing with regard to single-family dwelling, you know, what that really means. We already have on our work program the exploration that we're going to do with accessory structures. Our previous chair for the Planning and Zoning Commission asked us to look at other possible uses for, you know, existing accessory structures and, you know, what could be done with new accessory structures, which could include potentially housing. If there are other jurisdictions outside of Iowa, I know, that have ordinances that have been adopted by local jurisdictions and, you know, passed on through state statutes. So this is something that we're really excited about looking at and reporting to the PNC and back to the supervisors on. So it will include some information on the core of, you know, what it means to have a single family dwelling. You know, it's not uncommon for people to have a bathroom in their basement, or to have bedrooms in their basement, or like a kitchenette or something. So this is something that, you know, I think is timely. Like I said, we've been contacted by a lot of different people who have asked us to look into this further.
Jerry, did you happen to follow the recent election at the Ames City Council that one of the candidates, one who's now been sworn into office, was looking, wants the city to also look at accessory housing, conversion of garages and above garages, et cetera, as a way of looking for affordable housing alternatives.
Yeah,
so you may want to check it. You may just want to touch base with the city as that may move forward. Right now, it's just, it was part of her campaign.
Okay. Hagerville Mobile Home Park, they were required to get down to 34 total maximum mobile homes by the 1st of August. That property, though, has been sold. And, well, there was an offer made.
Okay.
And we have been contacted, our department has been contacted to address some questions with regard to legislation that was passed last session, dealing with non-conforming mobile home parks and them being allowed to exchange existing for other units. And so we responded to the current property owner and the individual who was put in an offer to this facility. So,
do we have a minimum size? I know the issue that's being asked about has to do with trading out old mobile homes, and the most comparable trade for a newer one ultimately is the larger. But do we have a minimum size then about how many square foot is?
I think that's addressed in our districts where it's actually zoned.
Okay.
But with these where it's a non-conforming use, the challenge is interpreting the legislation, what the intent is.
The zone ones don't allow what would be an RV, correct?
Are we talking
about trying to remember on the zoned ones what the issue was, the size.
Yeah, well, you can get you can do RVs, you can request RVs through like a conditional use permit under our ordinance.
Conditional, yeah.
But like with legal non-conforming, we think the intent is similar to similar. And we've been asked, would we allow or support a zoning permit to be issued to replace a single wide or a 15 or a 15 with a double wide that's twice the width. And we don't think that that's the intent of the legislation that was passed. So we have responded that way.
Okay, thank you. But
yeah, it's something that is going to be coming up very soon. So the charge now is to get down to the number, and then they had some questions about exchanging. I think we provided some pretty good information.
Okay, great. I would like to see that information when you have time to send out scan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned that the Perkins B&B at the McKay property. We filed appeals. I think we heard from our attorneys that we are to hear decisions on the 9th and the 23rd with regard to our appeals, and so we look forward to finding more out about those decisions.
Jerry, before you leave this slide, the ongoing complaint, the last one, 170th Street, did you skip over that one?
Ball. Yeah, that it's a small parcel on 170th south of a county park. We did a notice of violation, didn't get any response, so we're going to citation, which means we're going to be required to respond to a judge. And so we've got a mobile home, there's appliances. A while back we heard from the property owner that other people are dumping things there. But these things have not been cleaned up.
Okay.
And so we're in the citation mode.
Okay.
To be filed with the court.
Is there some particular special feature of the property that attracts the dumping by?
Probably being able to see that there's stuff there.
Oh, okay. So
imagine, and you know, there was a van there. There was like a washer or dryer close to the right of way. I think the van got removed. But there's appliances, there's bikes, there's metal, okay, plastics, mm-hmm, all kinds of stuff. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And then the work program, I'm not planning on going through it in detail. We went through it at the joint meeting. We've got 25 items. 12 we plan to address during the first year, which will take us through. Half of those will be to be completed by the end of February, and then the remainder by the end of April. Ames Urban Fringe Plan, we're going to have a resolution before the board, hopefully by the end of January, to address the interest that the county has in continuing or extending the 2080 agreement with Ames and Gilbert, and the interest in working out policy improvements to the agreement. So we'll have that before you. But we're working on scheduling. There's a lot of things to cover in 2020. We're very excited about it. And so we've been spending the last few staff meetings, going through like our schedule. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
So the Urban Fringe Plan, could you have that resolution to extend that because with the Ames 2040 going on? And I know they're having... Tonight they're having an input session on that, and then the following Tuesday. Pardon?
Yeah, it's on the four scenarios tonight.
Mm-hmm. And the following Tuesday they may start making decisions. I was going to ask if we all three have another meeting elsewhere next Tuesday. Are you planning on attending that city council meeting?
I was planning on attending tonight to observe. To observe the input on the four scenarios.
Yeah.
But are you asking about next week's?
Yeah.
I could certainly participate in
that. If that works in your schedule, that might be a good thing to have somebody from the county there.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, because with Ames Urban Fringe, the agreement that we have now expires, I think, July of 2021, so we're trying to get out ahead of that with that resolution.
Yeah, and that might add other areas, to the other partners that are infringed, depending on how that
goes.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions?
I don't. Thank you. No. Presentation.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Upcoming agenda items. Does anybody have any to suggest for next?
Yes. Okay. Let me check my notes that aren't here. Okay. All right. So, I was wondering if either of you had talked to the League of Women Voters or to the 19th, the Ames Story 19th Amendment Commemorative Committee about a proclamation that we would pass declaring 2020 as the year of the 19th Amendment.
Didn't we already do that?
I thought we did an amendment already with the League.
They brought a resolution to us in December.
Okay, thank you. I don't remember that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. All right, so never mind on that one. Okay. So that's the only one that comes to mind right away.
Okay.
I don't have anything, sorry.
Okay. No. I don't either.
Okay.
Then we'll go into public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments because of the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. So I'd open the public forum. And anybody who want to make any comments could please come to the microphone. Seeing nobody moving to the microphone, I'll close the public forum. Next, we have liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors.
Sure.
Supervisor Hedden, did you want to start?
Sure. Yesterday I attended the mini assessors meeting. I do have some information to provide both of you. In regards to their budgeting proposal, and they did provide a narrative. So if you have any questions on that, Dawn Tank also said if you had any questions or big concerns with it, if you would email her ahead of time some of your questions, one that they would be prepared to respond to versus going to the next meeting with the large group. And not being prepared to respond,
sure.
Was just her one thing. They did set the meeting for January or the 28th instead of next week, since none of us knew about it, and we have to have at least two people attend that and stuff. So that will be January 28th at 5:30 p.m. over at the City Hall. They do it prior to their board meeting. Last night, I partook in the second of my, I think, six session series of the Public Health Leadership Academy that I'm doing. Last night was on local boards, kind of local governments, and the difference between kind of the advisory capacity ones and the ones that have more policy authority. So it's been very, very interesting. It's been worth my while. For doing it about an hour and a half, and we do it through Zoom, so you can see the whole presentation ahead of time. And I usually print out the presentation so I can take copious notes along the way. So that's things around there. As far as my schedule this week, like the both of you, we've got budget workshops pretty much for the rest of the week. So that will keep us, I would say, relatively busy. I do have Thursday the 9th, I have a Boost board meeting. We are in the process of looking to hire a new executive director. The current one from Boost is retiring at the end of June. The goal is to have a new person in place hired by the end of May so that they've got a month overlap for training purposes. So that is something that I will be working on. I will also make note that the DCAT, which normally meets the second Friday of the month, which would be the 10th, actually was moved to the 17th. I don't know if I said something to them that I probably wouldn't be able to make it because of budgetary workshops, or if it was just their schedule worked for everyone else that they moved it to the 17th, but it works for all of us to be able to attend that particular meeting. So that's what will be on my agenda for this week.
Let's see. I attended the COLO City Council meeting last night. I had told the new mayor I'd show up, so there'd be a friendly face there. The key things to come out of that, first of all, is they would like you, Linda, and maybe Mike Cox, and who's chair of the Conservation Board right now?
Chris.
Okay, Chris, still. Okay. They would welcome you to come next month, requesting that you come to discuss starting the discussion again or bringing it back up about maybe hooking into their sewer so that we could run sewer from Hickory Grove Park. And
Mike has talked to him.
Yes, Mike did talk to the mayor. Mike is telling the mayor understands that from Mike that Mike already has the money to do the sewer project. And I said, well, maybe he's planning on spending it out of conservation, does have a couple of funds. You know, there's the Friends of Conservation, and there's the DAPL money. There's about, as we heard in our budget update, there's about $1.1 or $1.2 million in that. I just explained to him, well, that it still has to go through process, okay, but that's, yeah, so on that. So I think that's why I've been asked for you to come, because I explained that you were the person taking over. A couple of the council members felt that when former Supervisor Marty Kinney had been talking to them about this, because this has been a long process discussion, and the primary thing that had to happen before really we got into discussion of hooking up was they felt major leakage of their stormwater system, and that was running a lot through the system, and the system couldn't handle anything more if we hooked up to their utilities. And so apparently a couple of the council members had been under the impression that we might help them pay for even those research costs. And I told him that I'd never heard that. I had heard that at one point former Supervisor Chitty was discussing with them about a payment of a contribution in return for hooking up.
I had heard the dollar amount of $200,000, which was recently what was basically 10% of what their engineers were telling them it might cost to replace and upgrade their sewer and or their lagoon. So I told them that I didn't feel that was any more on the table. It had been mentioned to former Supervisor Sanders and I only in passing. There'd never been any former board action, and they're just kind of update information, and that they should not be counting on that until that they talk to you and begin the process over again, and you would
totally
be
new to this. So
yes, and you would be taking over for it. Okay.
I will hold the mic, and I might also touch base.
Great. So kind of do you get all the information on this, mm-hmm. the same there. Okay. So then this week, in addition to spending all our time in budget, I am planning on going tonight to the city council and city council for the 2040 plan to listen. I did go to the previous meeting where the four scenarios for growth were laid out. And at the end of that meeting afterwards, because they weren't taking public input, which would include us at this point, I did go up and made clear to the mayor and to the council members and to Steve Shanker that I felt the suggestion for the east expansion was not as viable as if they went ahead and they decided to start building housing to the east of the interstate, that did not seem as viable as the other three options.
It's a personal opinion.
This was a personal opinion. I made it very clear to them that it was it's just my personal opinion, because I did not feel, first of all, I was concerned about Kettleson March. Second, that I was concerned about that maybe that land wasn't going to be as free as they felt it would be. But, of course, things change over time. But anyway, but I am going tonight. Also, in the next two nights of the asset hearings, I'm going to go to listen to some very specific agency hearings that I'm interested in that we're going to have follow-up with, or that are related to the housing or the hunger collaboration. I just want to go listen to those presentations. I'm also, let's see what else is on the plate. I think on Thursday there's the Ames Economic Development Commission's annual economic update preview, and that I believe is at 7:30 in the morning. And there also that night is the Ames Convention and Civic Bureau. I think you all got invitations to those. And
I can't go the ninth anyways because I had the Boost board meeting, so I would not be able to attend.
I think we need to assure that you two are on the same mailing list.
If you're getting the invitations, can you respond to them and ask that we be put on?
I can. I mean, these have both come. Okay, all right.
I think I saw the morning one, but
okay.
I did not see
the morning one came via the Chamber's weekly update also. Okay.
I thought I saw it. Maybe I saw it actually on Facebook was there.
Okay.
That might have been where I saw the morning one, but I haven't seen anything otherwise.
Going back to the Chamber, are you two getting the weekly updates?
Not here. I'm getting it from personal email. I think I need to change that.
Okay.
I'll have to relook.
Relook, because I had significant problems getting the weekly updates. And so it ended up, it has something to do with the Chamber ADC's programming.
We can follow
yes. Okay, so anyway, but okay, so then also Friday morning I'm at the AADC Executive Committee meeting on that. So that's all plastered around the hearings. Okay. And then I do want to correct myself. I said while we were discussing the county attorney appointments or whatever, I said about the previous screening process and the matrix that I'd been elected in, and I had not been elected yet. It was in September, I believe, that she was appointed. So I want to correct that. I wasn't in the audience. My impressions were all there, but I hadn't been elected yet. So, okay, I'm done with that. Yeah.
Okay. Next week is pretty much a budget work session.
Mm-hmm.
So couple other things on my calendar, but I didn't bring it, so I can't recall what they are. I have nothing else to report, so I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Edens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Sure.
Good meeting.